Are we playing anybody else's music, by the way?
We just played yours. Who's going to ride your wild horses from Octone Baby? That was U2 on our special evening with U2 on the Global Satellite Network. Mono, that was perfect timing, just as we went on the air. And we're going to talk to Rich. Rich is in Hartford, Connecticut, listening to us at 106 HCN. Hi, Rich.
Hi, how are you?
Okay,
you
speak up a little bit, right into your phone, and talk to U2. What's your question?
Hi, U2.
Hi.
Hi.
What are your views on ticket scalping, and how do you feel that your program on scalping is working during this tour?
Well, we hate anything or anybody who ends up ripping off our fans, so we're on that level, it really pisses us off. And we do what we can to keep a few tickets back for each show and release them on the night to try and undermine the scalping market, you know.
We usually do keep a few, on these bigger shows, a few thousand back, and good seats at that. But the best way we can deal with it is to play to the amount of people who want to see us. And on the indoor tour, we wanted to play indoors, and we didn't want to be playing for 2 years, so we had to do just, you know, quick, kind of kiss me quick concerts, one night or two nights in each town. And that's why, you know, people were paying ridiculous sums of money, $1,500 people were paying in Los Angeles, ridiculous sums. And that's why we're going outdoors and we're playing these stadiums. And when we sell out really quickly, we put on we do a second date, so that, you know, we're trying to play to as many people as want to see us.
Do you think it was an easier problem to solve than you found it to be? Before you started out, did you think you'd, like, beat the scalpers?
We did. We went to, you know, a lot of trouble with phones.
Mm-hmm,
and getting people, you know, all kinds of shenanigans. Our manager, Paul McInnes, went into a lot of trouble to see that it would be organized. But it is very hard. It's a hard thing to get around. The best way is to play big places. And we were worried about playing big places because it's hard for the people at the back. That's why we invented this completely over-the-top Zoo TV idea, which is probably better at the back of the hall than it is at the front. I mean, it's a very visual as well as audio experience. And I think that, you know, you've just got to accept the idea that we're playing outdoors. And actually, we have enjoyed these dates better. And a lot of the reviewers and the critics are saying that it's better than the indoor tour, that for some reason it feels more intimate. I don't know if that's some of the older songs I want.
Well, thanks for your call, Rich. That was a good question. Thanks very much. And don't anybody go away, because we're going to be right back with more of our special evening with U2 right here on the Global Satellite Network. And we're back here in New York live with all of the fellows in U2 here on the Global Satellite Network. We're going to go to the phones again. And our next caller is named Bill. He's from Little Rock, Arkansas. And he's listening to us in Magic 105. Hi, Bill. How are you doing tonight?
I'm fine. How are you? I can't believe I've got U2 on the phone. That's better than running for president.
Bill, what's your last name? Bill?
Clinton.
Bill Clinton.
Yeah, I'm doing a big job interview in America.
Oh, yeah?
Kind of like being on a rock tour. I'm on a bus going across America interviewing for a job.
Is that Bill?
Yeah, it's him. That's Governor Clinton, all right. It's a pleasure to have you on the air with us, Governor.
Thank you.
How are you?
Really have you two there?
Yeah, they're all here. But here's Bono.
This is Bono here. How do you want us to call you? Do you want to call us? Should we call you Governor or Bill?
No, you call me Bill.
All right, and you can call me Betty. hey, you know, we have a few questions for you. That's kind of cool that you took the call. We've been trying to call George, but that's pretty cool.
He's not into music like I am.
Yeah, well, you know, there's a lot of similarities maybe between, you know, rock, you know, the way rock and roll, the way politics has become. You know, you're on the road, you're in your tour bus. People are asking you for your autographs, and
yep.
you got a, you know, support act now with Senator Gore and, you know, big PA system. We saw the conventions. I mean, the Democratic convention, that was a great gig. Very Zoo TV. Does that, how do you feel about the way politics is getting in the 90s? Do you think it's all the glitz and all the razzmatazz takes away from, like, the seriousness of some of the issues you're talking about? How do you feel about that?
Well, I think it can. And that's one of the reasons that we're out here on this bus tour, because I think that a lot of people get real frustrated when they think that, that it's all just prepared and all organized and all rehearsed. And they need to believe that, you know, we're people and that we can confront them personally and that we'll answer questions. So the two things I'm doing that are different this year are a whole lot of town meetings on television where people who may not even be farming can come and in the studio just ask whatever questions they want to ask, totally unrehearsed. And the other thing is we're getting in these buses and going across America to little towns who never see people running for national office. Because I do think that, you know, the entertainment part of politics can overtake the substance, and we need to do better with that.
Yeah, we have the other kind of problem in our band sometimes. Now, that's, we've done those towns and we've been on those roads, and I hope you get better motorway services than we got. I'd just like to say one thing. You know, we're Irish band, Bill, and we come from Ireland, and we're not really, you know, up on the ins and outs of America's internal politics. But whoever sits in the White House affects, you know, all of us. It certainly affects Irish people. It affects the rest of the world. And you must, I think, admit that America in some quarters has a very bad rap at the moment, and you're seen as, you know, meddling in other people's foreign affairs, and there's a kind of a bad image, and I'm sure the people of America have had enough of that. And how do you feel? I mean, is there a line here? I mean, how do you draw the line between, you know, positive influence over what's going on in the globe and what could be just called, you know, meddling and interference?
Well, I think the way you draw the line is to try to have as much of your involvement with the world as possible be things that promote freedom and democracy and prosperity and opportunity and alleviate suffering, things that are humanitarian in nature, first. And second, when we do get involved in the affairs of other countries as much as possible, we ought to try to do it through the United Nations with a whole lot of other countries agreeing that it's something that needs to be done. I think that the world doesn't want America to try to run it, but the world needs a strong America standing up for the right things. We can't withdraw from the world, and you're right. You know, you're from Ireland, and one of the things that I wish that the United States could do, not on its own, but maybe through the United Nations, is finally play a constructive role in bringing an end to the historic tensions that still exist on that island. But it's something that we can't impose our will on. It's just something we have to just keep working and talking and hoping that by working with good people in other nations, we can make a difference. I think in Somalia, where so many people are suffering and starving and dying, you know, we're now pushing the United Nations to take a more active role in bringing in an airlift and trying to alleviate the suffering there, and the same thing in Bosnia. And I think that we have to try to do those things, but our role will be different than it was when the Soviet Union and the United States sort of faced off against each other across a great nuclear divide. I hope we never have to go back to that kind of time again.
Well, we hope so too, and I must say, you know, I've been in Central America and I've seen the way it's gone wrong in the past, and now that, I mean, I'm sure this defense budget must be cut now that the Cold War has ended, and we hope that it goes to better things. And I think people of Somalia are very, you know, very much in our minds when we say that. But there's one more question, Bill. Censorship, and I know that Tipper Gore has been involved here, and some people have castigated her as an advocate of censorship. And I mean, does she know anything about rock and roll, Bill? And are politicians qualified to decide what is and what isn't art? Could you give us a wrap on that?
Well, let me answer that, and then let me talk about Tipper Gore. First of all, I'm against censorship. I don't think politicians should legislate what is and isn't art. I don't agree with what Jesse Helms has tried to do to the National Endowment for the Arts.
Amen.
And I'll try to keep politics out of it. Now, what Tipper Gore tried to do was very different. What she asked was that the record industry voluntarily do what the movie industry had been doing in our country for years, which is basically to communicate with a voluntary labeling procedure something of the content of certain records, just the way we do with movies. And essentially the record industry wound up agreeing with her, but she was never for censorship, and I wouldn't ever be for censorship, and I certainly don't approve of the way that we have heavily politicized the National Endowment for the Arts in the last few years, mostly because of the influence of Senator Jesse Helms and people like that. And you won't have to worry about that in our administration. We'll support the arts, but we won't politicize them.
It's something that we, you know, it's something, one of the positive aspects of, you know, of the image of America was always, you know, the First Amendment, and this was supposed to be the home of free speech and free expression, and I'm sure along with that comes a lot of bile, but that's, it's better that, you know, people hear things off a record than out of the barrel of a gun, and I'm glad that you feel that way, and I hope that you stand over that. You know, we were looking up when we were talking about calling the White House, which we do is kind of, it's mischievous, but we're kind of serious too. Just we looked up the dictionary definition of a politician, and I can't remember it offhand in the Oxford dictionary, but it says it suggests, you know, manipulation and a person who'll tell you what you want to hear, and you have a reputation of as a man who's not about that. I just wonder how you feel about politicians. Do you, I mean, in general, the ones you've met, and what do you think of George?
Most of the people I've known in politics over the years are basically honest, worked hard, weren't in it for the money, and wanted to make a difference. The problem is that in a time like this where, you know, our country has a lot of problems at home, you know that, you've been involved in the Rock the Vote campaign, which I thank you for.
Sure.
But we've got all these problems in the United States, and then there are all these problems in the world we need to address if we can get our own business together at home. And the problem that I have is that too many politicians won't talk honestly about the problems we have. The problem I have with Mr. Bush is that I just don't think he's serious about addressing America's deep problems. And I think that he basically believes as long as if we keep taxes real low on the wealthiest Americans and get out of the way, everything else will work fine. This whole trickle-down economics theory. I basically believe that we have to focus on our people. We don't have a person to waste. And what works in a world economy is educating people and keeping them healthy and having people work in teams, work cooperatively, so that they can be rewarded for their labors and so that they can live up to the fullest of their potential. And that my big problem with George Bush and his whole administration is they're just not on the same radar screen with me about what we really think America's problems are, how serious they are, and what kind of strong response we need to them.
Right. Well, yeah. We obviously we're not going to take sides in the election, and the way we go about this is just, you know, we don't suggest who people vote for, but we do suggest that they vote.
I must say, you know, our young people 18 to 24, most of the millions of people listening to us tonight, they're listening because of you, not because of me. They've got more at stake in this election than I do, and the reason I got into this is that I didn't want my daughter and people, the age of the people that are listening to us, to grow up to be the first generation of my countrymen and women to do worse than their parents just because we had a messed up political system. And you don't need to ask them to vote for me. Just ask them to look at the issues and vote. This Rock the Vote thing you've been involved in is really, really good, and I'm grateful to you for it.
Well, that's all right, and I must say, I think we've got to go now, but I must say, from all of us, you sound like a president.
Well, I want to say, as a middle-aged man, I appreciate the fact that you made the the Joshua Tree and that record Angel of Harlem at Sun Studios. You made me feel like I had a place in rock music, even at 46.
Well, Bill, maybe so.
Well, Bill, if we got you into it, we must be doing something wrong.
Well, listen, Bill, maybe someday. This is Dave Herman. I'm not from Ireland. I'm just from the Bronx, and I'm a disc jockey here in New York. I'm moderating the show. I was going to say that maybe someday they'll need a horn player on one of their records.
Well, I must say, you're very cool. You've got a lot of guts to take the call, and I have some problems imagining you pogoing to our music, but I'm very glad that you've listened to our records, and we're very flattered. Thanks very much for calling, man.
Mike, thanks as well, Governor Clinton, and I would point out to anybody listening, if they want to learn a whole lot more about you, there's an extraordinary issue of Rolling Stone magazine that just hit the newsstand. You're on the cover, and they ask you some hard questions, and I think you answered them with equal aplomb. So thanks for the call.
Goodbye. Thanks.
God bless.
Bye.
Well, that was a nice little surprise, Governor Bill Clinton calling in. He had just come off a plane. He had been traveling somewhere, and I think he hit an airport and got to the airport in Little Rock and went right to a phone and called us.
Wow.
He told us he was on a bus.
Which is great. Well, he had been on a bus, but he took the plane from the last bus. Anyway, we've run way over because of it, and I must thank everybody for listening, everybody for calling, and I got to thank you guys, The Edge, Larry Mullen, Adam Clayton, Bono. This has been I know everybody listening, millions of people had a great time. I had a good time.
Well, you know, it's very hard. When you come on the radio, you feel a bit off. It's hard to talk to people you've not met and known. And it's very easy to be smug. And, you know, we're very good at that.
Okay, thanks, Bono. And our special thanks tonight to Paul McGinnis and Ellen Darst at Principal Management, Brenda Morgan and Barbara Moriarty at ABC, Larry Chancia at Island Records, Ralph Petrosino at SIR, and to Anita Safran.
And Suzanne Doyle.
Very good. And again, thanks to Governor Clinton and all of our callers. We're on the Global Satellite Network. I'm Dave Herman. Good night, everybody.